യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാദ്വിവരണസ്യ ച. So in the last session we just touched the fourth chapter, that is the Kaivalya Pada, the fourth chapter dealing with the liberation. So I think I just discussed the first sutra, but I just try to recapitulate. So the first sutra in the fourth chapter is Janma Aushadha Mantra Tapa Samadhiyaha Siddhayaha. So the word used is Siddhayaha. So here is a reference to the contents of the third chapter, Vibhutis. So four types of mental, psychological powers are discussed here, not spiritual power. That should be understood. It has nothing at all to do with spirituality. Faculties, abilities, physical, psychological, and all powers that we can achieve or obtain by focusing mental, nervous, intellectual energies on a single point. So, one is Janma Siddhi. People who are born with some special skills of mind and body and intellect. Concentration. So, you potentially in his sutras do not explain why this happens. So, Vyasa in his commentary on one of the sutras, Parinamata Apasamskara Dukhameva Sarvam Vivekinaha, in the sutra, Vyasa throws some light. He says, you cannot have any taste or skill in this life which you have not worked hard for, which you have not struggled for attaining in the previous life. So he always sees a connecting link, a cause-effect relationship between every faculty, every skill that could be called inherent or anything that you are born with. That's called Janma Siddhi. Well, the most telling examples are the instinctive skills of animals, human beings, different species. They are born with some skills which are we call instinctive skills. So, tigers hunting smaller animals, or birds looking for their prey. All these natural instinctive forces are born, inborn. Of course, there are also some higher skills which we may be born with. The second one is Aushadha Siddhi. The direct difference is to a school of philosophers who lived in ancient India. It's called Rasayadigaha, means Rasayana Shastra, those who practiced Rasayana Shastram. Normally, the implication is to either medical scientists or to those who practice alchemy. I mean, trying to convert lower metals to gold, or those who prepared medicinal preparations for improving health. So, it is only for health. The second siddhi is mantra japa. Mantra japa siddhi are twofold. One, peace of mind, tranquility, serenity, and so on. The second one is through a process of internalizing the meaning of mantra. I already explained this in the previous sessions. When you utter a mantra, there are four stages that you go through in your evolution in the mantra japa. Any word, every word has, in a general way, has got these four dimensions, which constitute the very foundation of the spoda system, where, you know, the ultimate one sound symbol which is considered to be the origin of everything. So here, mantra japa is mentioned. One is the ordinary powers that we associate with a spoken word, not a written word. A word has no life unless it is spoken. Written words have no meaning in the yoga and Vedanta tradition. Even swadhyaya becomes swadhyaya only when you read it and you mentally listen to your word. That's how spoken words, written words become effective. So that is an interesting thing to remember. So that's the basis of oral tradition. So the commentators tell you, see, when you read something silently, a word, a sacred word, symbol, we call mantra, it benefits you because you are able to internally, mentally listen to the voice. Because when you read, the voice is produced, only that voice is silent. So silence also is an expression of a word. In fact, that's what mantra shastra is all about. You have to travel from the audible dimension of a word to the inaudible silent dimension of it. So the audible dimension is called vaikari. The inaudible, the highest dimension is called para. Sara para pasyanti madhyama vaikari. In a descending order, words have got a way of traveling forward, moving forward in an ascending scale of subtlety and effectiveness. So you find a word that you don't utter, that you strongly feel within, will have a deeper effect on your mental system than a word that you speak. So when you practice mantra japa, and when you evolve, when you ascend the scale from vaikari to para, from the grossest audible vibration of the sound to a more subtle, that is madhyama, and then spashyanti, finally para, when you realize the essence of what the sacred word symbolizes, this gives you some special skills, abilities, this practice. Power of mind, power of mental focus, power of concentration, and so on. Because a word that you read, that you speak, becomes a part of our system when we are able to ponder over, think over what we hear, and later we internalize it. Sravana, Manana, Nididhyasana in the Vedantic tradition. More or less, that's what you find here. So one interesting thing is, a word that is not spoken has no meaning in yoga, Vedanta, Shastra. So you read the scripture, maybe silently, but when you read it, you are actually connecting yourself with that word, and you hear that word mentally. Mental hearing, mental seeing, mental smelling, that is subtle, equal to sushma, sravana, sushma, darshana, all these are called in the system. The fourth one is tapa, austerity, chitta egagriya manatapa. When you practice restraint, control of the mind, the senses, and you focus on one important aspect, that becomes that becomes yours, and you internalize that. And the fifth one is samadhiya. So the fifth power is samadhi. That means as a result of extreme concentration, that alone is lasting. All other skills frequently are dangerous. They are obstacles. They sometimes can cause any of the nine antarayas that we already discussed earlier. So, that's the first interesting sutra. The second sutra is Jatyande Parinamaha Pragati Apuryat. That's the those who have got the sutra, you should remember. ജാത്യന്തര പരിണാമ പ്രകൃതി ആപൂരാത്. സോ ആ ഹിയർ യൂസ് ഇൻ ദ സെൻസ് ഇ കംപ്രിഹെൻസീവ് ഫ്രോം ആൾ ഡിറക്ഷൻസ്. സോ ദ ചേഞ്ച് ഇൻ ടു അനദർ സ്പീഷീസ് ഈസ് ബൈ ഫില്ലിംഗ് ഓഫ് നേച്ചർ. ദിസ് ഈസ് എ സിമ്പിൾ ട്രാൻസ്ലേഷൻ. നൗ ദിസ് ലോട്ട് ഓഫ് എക്സ്പ്ലനേഷൻ. ഫസ്റ്റ് വി മസ്റ്റ് റിമെമ്പർ ദി യോഗ സിസ്റ്റം philosophically is linked to Sankhya metaphysics. Both the systems are dualistic, Prakriti and Purusha. So they are eternal, everlasting categories. So it is called Dvaita. It's kind of Dvaita system of philosophy. Now here, evolution takes place at the level of Prakriti. And it is called Pradhana. Means it is the first evolute. It is not an evolute, it is the origin of all evolution. Everything in this world consists of 23 evolutes of this Prakriti. So including Prakriti, it is called 24 principles which constitute the creator universe. So from Prakriti, Mahatattva, then Buddhi, then Ahankara, then from Sattva Ahankara, Rajasya Ahankara, all the five senses of perception, five senses of action and mind, and then from Tamasika Ahankara, the Panchatanmatras, Panchamahabhutas, they altogether constitute the created world. So everything in this world, including our body, our mind, our intellect, our thinking process, everything is a manifestation of matter according to Yoga Sutra. Now here, the Patanjali is actually projecting an alternate school of alternate philosophy of evolution. That's what I want to draw your attention to in today's session. So Patanjali says, there is evolution taking place at all levels. At all levels of organisms and also the animal kingdom, the plant world, and also among the human species, evolution taking place. So the stage of evolution from one species to another species takes place as a result of nature filling some vacuum, some empty places. I shall try to explain. Before going to the subject, there are some examples given the commentators, Vachaspati and Tattva Vaisharadhi. Many of the commentaries give some example. Think of a lake or a river. Or like a lake is a better example. And there are fields around the lake. There is no water in the field, but the lake is full of water. Now, when you cut a canal, you are actually removing the barrier, the obstacle for the water to flow to the field. Let us say there is a lake and you are trying to bring water, you want to irrigate a field with the water in the lake. You cut a canal, let us say half a mile of canal. What you are doing actually, the water has the natural characteristic of flowing to the field, but it is blocked by a big landscape. And you cut a canal, you remove it, what you get is the natural faculty of the water to flow takes place because the barrier is removed. That sutra comes in the next. Varana Vedastu Tata Kshetrikavad. The next sutra is dealing with that. But this should be understood properly to understand Patanjali's alternate paradigm of evolution. Vivekananda's famous definition, that he makes two important definitions. Education is the manifestation of perfection already in man. Religion is the manifestation of divinity already in man. Which means there is a Buddha hiding in an amoeba. There is a Christ hiding in an ant, an insect. What that means? An insect as the efficient, the inherent faculty to evolve into a Christ or a Buddha. But there are obstacles. So these obstacles should be removed. Barriers should be removed. in a sinner, there is a possibility of a saint. So you give the sinner, let us, I don't use, want to use in the theological, ecclesiastical sense, in which you use the Christian theology. I'm used in the sense somebody who is doing something undesirable. It has nothing to do with Augustine's idea of radical sinfulness of man. I'm just using a simple sense, means somebody who is doing something wrong, let us stealing or whatever it is. That person has the potency to become a Buddha who won't steal. Now you give that person an environment, an opportunity to grow. It may take perhaps millions of life cycles, but the potency is there. What does it mean? The water in the lake has the potency to flow to the nearby field. But it cannot flow now because there is half a mile of rock, landscape, solid earth. You remove it and you cut a canal and the water flows by the force of its own power of gravitation. That means jatyantara apura means there is evolution taking place at the lower levels of creation. So insects, flies, mosquitoes, they are evolving. They are also evolving slowly to higher animals. And there is evolution taking place at the human level also. Not biological level. Patanjali has something offered to Darwin, who believed in the evolution based on the sexual selection and then, you know, survival of the fittest. Patanjali takes the just opposite view. Because the problem with Darwin is, suppose human beings become so cultured and refined, there's a chance that the whole humanity become extinct. Don't you think so? Really speaking, suppose you cannot compete with others. There is no scope for competition. There is no scope for cut the other man's throat to make a few extra dollars. If you just remove this problem of utilitarian or pragmatic principles of practical utility, if there is no scope to compete with others, to pull the other man down and take his place, it's all about survival of the fittest. Now, the problem with Darwin is, if human beings become cultured, they become extinct. But Patanjali says there is a higher evolution taking place at a higher level. So, just as an ordinary human being can become a Buddha, so also perhaps insects and mosquitoes can evolve and become higher thinking animals, like dogs, for example, elephants, thinking animals which can respond to human emotions, human feelings, you know, who can intelligently respond. So, jatyantara parinamaha prakriti apurat. So, apura, this means apurana, that is the explanation by Vajaspati and others, which means there is an all-round, all-comprehensive filling up. It means when the earth is removed, water flows to the field. So, also, as we remove obstacles that stand in the way of our own intellectual, spiritual growing up, evolution, then growth or evolution will take place. So, that sutra continues its discussion. That means a manifestation of whatever we have got within will unfold in course of time. Because everything is in prakriti. So remember, you have to remember, keep the picture of prakriti in our mind. When human beings work hard, they evolve consciously. Animals behave and they evolve instinctively, so they take long time. That's the idea behind. So, from the highest prakriti, pradhana, mahatattva, then cosmic intelligence, buddhi, sometimes they are equated in some traditions, and then from that ahankara, egoism, which has got three dimensions, sattvika, rajasika and tamasika. From these three three dimensions of egoity or egoism, 10 senses of perception, that is jnanendriyas and karmendriyas, plus mind evolve, and from the tamasika ahankara, panchatanmatras, they are the unmanifested aspects of the five elements, panchamahabhudas, and from their grosser aspect, panchamahabhudas, tanmatras to mahabhudas. So, this evolution, this growth, this change take place. So, in other words, parinama, evolution, growth means removing the obstacles. So, in the coming sutras, he will elaborate, but to understand the meaning of the second sutra, we have to take all these five, six sutras together. He says, dharma, adharma, good karmas and bad karmas play important roles in our evolution. Good actions, sadkarmas, good actions, good deeds, good thoughts, good ideas, unselfishness, karma yoga, prayer, all these will remove the barriers, will remove the shackles, the chains that bind you. It's just like opening a canal that connects the lake with the field and water flows. Well, it is something like you get a block of stone and after 2 years a sculptor presents before you a statue of Buddha. So what he did, he removed all the unnecessary irrelevant parts from that stone, chiseling out. That means Buddha was hiding in that stone. So, all the unnecessary things were removed. So, Buddha comes out. Buddha was hiding within, in that block of stone. So, also an ornament is hiding in a, let us say, a golden biscuit. You don't tie it in your neck. But a goldsmith can bring out the hidden necklace from the golden block. So, the point is, good actions will remove the obstacles, bad actions will tighten the obstacles, strengthen the obstacles, increase the obstacles. So from lower species to higher species, Jatyendra Parinama is taking place. It is a kind of nature naturally responding to this process of evolution towards a higher level or evolution to a lower level. When good and bad actions are equal, you are born as a human being. When bad actions are more, you are born at a lower level. You get a demotion. When good actions are more than bad actions, you get a promotion. You are born into higher levels. This is the explanation. So, the third sutra, in fact, in a way, it strengthens, it reinforces the idea in this second one, that is, nimittam aprayojagam prakritinam varanabhedastu tata kshetrigavad. Kshetriga means actually it's a field. So example is taken from Patanjali, but Vyasa, Vajaspati and others, and especially Shankaracharya's Bhashya Vivarana elaborates on this point. So nimittam aprayojagam. Nimittam means actions or activities. Activities do not necessarily mean physical activities. Activities could mean, nimitta could mean thoughts, ideas, words we speak. In fact, everything that creates a vritti will become a samskara, that will become a sankalpa, which will become again karma. So it goes on, you know. So vritti becomes samskara, it can become a vasana, then sankalpa, and again the action is repeated. So every positive action will have the effect of reinforcing the barrier. Every negative action, every bad action, every bad thought, every bad idea, anything that is negative will strengthen the barrier, will reinforce the barrier, and any positive action will remove the barrier. It will help us in our evolution. So nimittam is aprayojaka, means actions do not have any positive effect. Their effect is negative. What does it mean? It means, well, when a sculptor manufactured an image of Buddha from a block of stone, All that he did was removing the unnecessary parts from the block of stone. So it is aprayojikam. It doesn't have any special benefit except removing all that is unnecessary. When all the unnecessary parts are removed, what do you get? Is a statue of Buddha. So that's the idea behind. That means whatever actions we do, good actions, good thoughts, good ideas, they do not constitute anything new, or the result they produce will only remove the barrier that stands in the way of our evolution. Is it clear to you? It doesn't produce anything new. It removes the barrier that stands in the way of evolution. That means within us, there is divinity, manifestation of divinity already in man. Swamiji's definition of this particular means the religion is a manifestation of divinity already in man. It's actually linked more to the Sankhya system. Of course, at the higher metaphysical level, it is linked to Vedanta. But the idea is perfection is already within. All that good actions we do, that really remove the obstacles that stand in the way of this perfection unfolding, manifesting itself. Prakritinam varanabhedastu. Varanabhedastu actually means, it means this, the varana actually means obstacle. Bheda, it breaks. They remove the obstacles. Just breakers of obstacles. That means good and bad deeds are not direct causes for transformation. Rather, they are only breakers of obstacles. Just as when you cut a canal, you remove that particular part of earth that stood in the way of the water flowing to the field. So the water starts flowing when the barrier is removed. So the example is given, Kshetrikavat. This is an example taken. So this is a very interesting aspect of Patanjali's concept of evolution. That means all progress, all power, all perfection, everything is already in everyone. So it is prevented from manifesting because of certain obstacles. If you remove those obstacles, then the manifestation will happen. So prayer, meditation, any spiritual practice, anything you do, they all help you to remove the obstacles that stand in the way of manifesting the divinity that is already within. The idea is very striking, you know, so very interesting. So two aspects are to be noted here. First, Patanjali's alternate paradigm of evolution, which means evolution is not at a physical level. Evolution is at the internal level. That means there is a saint, there is a philosopher in all of us, there is God in all of us. We should let that divine reality manifest. And there are obstacles. Obstacles are in the form of our vasanas, vrittis, samskaras, desires. All these create obstacles. Once we remove them, the reality manifests of itself. So that is one. Then the next one is nirmana citta anya asmita matrat. So now this is a very may appear to be a bit spooky, but there is nothing spooky about it. What it says is, you know, when you attain these siddhis, let us say, you have to remember these five types of siddhis: Jadma, Ushada, Mantra, Tapa, and Samadhi. There are five skills. Well, I am giving some example from modern life. When you become a musician, the musical perfection, when you become a poet, an artist, you acquire any special skill. When you acquire these skills, each of these attainment will give a particular kind of chitta, a particular way of thinking, acting, and responding to situations. So that mental mechanism is here called citta. That is nirmana cittani is the word used here. That should be understood only in the context. So the idea is, every skill will produce a citta, and when this citta evolves, what happens? That citta will be controlled and will be regulated by those skills you have already attained. Those cittas are actually different manifestations of the original mind. So the citta used here is asmita, pravritti bhede prayojagam cittam ekam anekesham, you find the next sutra. That means the theory of karma is that we suffer for our good or bad deeds, and the whole scope of philosophy is to reach the glory of man. Here I am reading from Swami Vivekananda. It's a very simple explanation. All the scriptures sing the glory of man, of the soul, and then in the same breath they preach karma. A good deed brings such a result and a bad deed such a result. And if the soul can be acted upon by a good or bad deed, the soul amounts nothing. So the central point is to be understood. Actions, karmas, and the result in the citta will not have any impact on Purusha or Atman. Atman is not acted upon by anything that happens in our life, in our mind or word or thought. None of these siddhis, none of these special skills will have any effect on the Atman. If they had any effect on the Atman, then Atman will not be unchanging, it will become mutable. So, but then bad deeds put a bar to the manifestation of the nature of the Purusha. So, you have to remember the Sankhya system. Somehow, for some reason, we forgot the fact that we are Purusha and we identify ourselves with what is not our true nature, that is, we identify ourselves with the Prakriti. So, when we live at the physical level, when we identify ourselves with the actions we do, with the feelings that we have in our mind, when we become anxious or excited or angry or sad, what happens? We define ourselves, we identify ourselves with the psychophysical mechanism. And that is only an evolution of Prakriti. So we forgot that we are Atman, so we started identifying ourselves with what is really not Atman, with the Prakriti. Now, at the Prakriti level, every good action will have the result of taking the evolution backward. So I shall try to explain this. In the Patanjali system, it is called, you know, reverse evolution is called. Involution or reverse evolution. So when I see a visual object, when the visual object, that experience of seeing the visual object has a tremendous effect on my mind, that's because I completely identify myself as the one who experiences the act of seeing the visual object. Or the visual object takes the form of my mind, or mind takes its form both ways. Now, when we do good actions, when we do spiritual practices, what happens is, from this we are going backward to our true nature, that is Purusha. But before reaching that, we have to first start the journey taking ourselves away from the five gross elements, ഇതിന്റെ ഫൈവ് സട്ടിൽ എലിമെന്റ്സ് ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ഫ്രം പഞ്ചമഹാഭൂതാസ് ടു പഞ്ചതന്മാത്രാസ് ആൻഡ് ദെൻ വി ഹാവ് ടു ടേക്ക് അവർ സെൽഫ് ടു അവർ മെന്റൽ ലെവൽ ബാക്ക്വേർഡ് മീൻസ് ആക്ച്വലി ഫോർവേർഡ് റിയലി സ്പീക്കിംഗ് ആൻഡ് ഫ്രം മൈൻഡ് ടു ബുദ്ധി ഫ്രം ബുദ്ധി ടു മഹത്തത്വം മഹത്തത്വം ടു പ്രകൃതി because bhagavatam is the first evolution from prakriti once we reach that level then we understand where we are not prakriti we are purusha it is called reverse in evolution or it's called involution so the whole purpose of spiritual life is to reverse the process of evolution here evolution should be understood in the context of sankhya philosophy When during interaction we can ask this question, I should explain, because the word evolution is used in two different contexts here. First, I use the word of evolution, the word evolution, manifestation of divinity already in man. When we remove obstacles, when we remove barriers, our natural real purusha, consciousness, manifests itself just as the Buddha image manifests itself when we remove all the unnecessary, when we chisel out all unnecessary parts from a block of stone. Or when we remove the earth that stands in the way of the water flowing from the lake to the field, when you cut a canal, the earth is removed, the water flows to the field. It's called Kshetrigavat. Through this, what happens? Good actions, good thoughts, good ideas will remove all the barriers and obstacles, will help in our evolution, that is unfoldment of divinity, perfection, Atman or Purusha already man inherent in us. This is one type of evolution, which is an ascent, growth, manifestation of our true nature. Now in the second fourth context, the fourth sutra, I use the word evolution. That is different. Please remember that. That evolution is the evolution in the context of Sankhya philosophy. What does it mean? From Prakriti, Mahatattva, Buddhi, then Ahankara, and then Creator Universe, all the five senses of action, five senses of perception, mind, subtle elements and gross elements, they all evolve. I mean, it is a descending process. Now, when you actually practice spirituality, what happens is, we are getting ourselves promoted. First, I think, an external experience, something that I see with my eyes, excites me. I lose my sleep. I become excited. This is the grossest level. An external object, which is one of the manifestations of Panchamahabhudas, completely had a damaging effect on my mind. That's because I identify myself as something or somebody who experiences the visual object, connecting with the Panchamahabhuda, gross object. And now, if I practice spiritual life, if I practice meditation, then what happens? I try to really discover my true nature, my transcendental dimension that goes beyond the external objects, senses, mind, intellect, and so on. And finally, I realize the fact all these faculties, mind, intellect, etc., are different manifestations of the real Atman within me. So this gradual going back to our true nature is called involution. To give an example, a tree going back to the seed is involution. A seed becomes a tree is evolution in the Sankhya context. This is the Sankhya context. But in the early sutra we mentioned, again the example of a Buddha hiding in a piece of stone is a good example. Or a Saint Francis of Assisi hiding in an amoeba is an example. Or a Christ, for that matter. That's what it means, divinity already in man. Vivekananda says that the difference between an amoeba and a Buddha is one of degrees and not of kind. This is Swamiji's own definition, elsewhere. the difference between an amoeba and a Buddha is one of degrees and not of kind. Buddha and amoeba belong to the same kind, same only degree of manifestation, divinity is different. So that's the idea behind. So that gradual unfolding or manifestation of the inherent divinity is actually the purpose of yoga and Vedanta. In the process of evolving, in the process of getting different skills, we may also develop different mental mechanisms. As I mentioned, you know, suppose you work hard for many years and become an artist. Your mind doesn't think, won't think the way it's thinking now. You become a scientist, your mind will be different. You become a musician, your mind will be different. So all these are changing manifestations of the mental system. There is only one chittam. That's the idea in the fifth sutra. Pravutti bhede prayojagam chittam ekam anekesham. That means, through the activities of different created minds are various, the one original mind is the only reality. Okay, now, I'm going to the sixth sutra. Tatra dhyanajam anashayam. Now, this is the most important sutra in this context. Now, we already discussed different types of vibhutis, siddhis, that is, janma, aushadha, mantra and tapa. And of course, the last is samadhija, siddhis. This particular sutra tells you that whatever skills, whatever powers you acquire through samadhi alone is lasting because that is devoid of any selfish content, that is totally free from desire. Any skill, any ability, any special faculties that you get as a result of meditation or as a result of mantra japas, they can disappear one day. They can be wiped out by a counter experience. So Shankaracharya says in this context, the real spiritual experience is something that you cannot attain. It is self-discovery. Just more or less like bringing out the hiding Buddha from the piece of stone. So he says, this liberation, Kaivalya mentioned here in another context, the Vivarana also, Shankaracharya says, he repeats what he says in the Vedanta text. What he says is, it is not vikarya, utpadya, samskarya, or apya. These are the four possibilities by which you can get things. See, a potter can make a pot, a goldsmith can make a jewelry. It is utpadya, something you make. It did not exist in that form and with that name before the pot maker made a pot from clay. So, anything, any of the higher spiritual power cannot be made, cannot be manufactured. It can only be brought out through gradual natural manifestation because it is already within. So it cannot be manufactured. Like the pot maker makes a pot. And then it cannot be made by bringing about a change. So you can bring out a change in something. You can add something or you can remove something. Then it brings about a change. Anything, whatever change you want to make, either you add something new to it or you remove something that is already there. So, this spiritual power, spirituality, that is called, you know, dhyanajam anashayam. It can be only attained through samadhi. And it cannot be created by vikara, by bringing about a change in the substance, either by taking out something or adding something else. And it cannot be made by processing, refining. You know, crude oil can be refined, you can get high quality fuel. It can be made like that. You cannot make it by processing, purifying or refining. And it is not something that you attain by leaving something behind. So, grama, gramantara gamanam, that is Shankaracharya's example. You leave one village behind and you reach another village or town. So, these higher skills, which are samadhija, mentioned in the first sutra as a fifth option for spiritual power, it cannot be attained, it cannot be reached as you reach one village after leaving behind another village. So it is not upadhyaya, samskarya, apya or vikarya. So all these four options are totally irrelevant in the matter of this manifestation of divinity already in man. So it is a striking contrast to Calvinism, you know, and the Protestant emphasis and Lutheran emphasis that you can't do much. Spiritual liberation or whatever it is a gift from God. You have no right and nothing to do with it. So that idea is a total contrast. You find such idea in Madhva system also in Indian Vedanta, in the lowest level of Vedantic evolution you find this kind of predestinian ideas. Anyway, so tatra dhyanajam anasayam, of these, the last one, that is samadhija siddhi, it is the only thing that really lasting, everything else is only momentary. Now we are going to seventh sutra, karma asukla krishnam yoginaha trividam itaresham. This is the, here some terms are used which you need to listen to carefully to understand the meaning. One is, see, different kinds of work, different kinds of activities are mentioned here. That means when a yogi has attained perfection, his actions and the karma produced by those actions do not bind him because he did not have any desire. That's why tatra dhyanajam anashayam, already mentioned in the earlier sutra, that highest spiritual power attained through samadhi is everlasting because there is no desire involved in it. So whatever he does, it doesn't bind him. Good actions he doesn't need because there is no barrier. Bad actions also, of course, he naturally will not do. So that's the idea behind. So he works good things, he does good things, but he doesn't care for the good results or anything. It is natural. Anyway, so here you find a few words are used. Ashukla. See, for example, we know what it means. Certain things which may not have any result, you know. So, sugamatra bhalam, that is tapasvadhyaya niridadhara. There are certain results that are pleasant, certain results which are not pleasant, dukkhamatra bhalam, that is klesha. And there are certain actions which are a mixture, good and bad results, both. Yogi doesn't care for any of these results. The natural freedom from selfishness, from desire. So freedom from desire is the most natural characteristic of a yogi. That's the idea behind. Now you can have interaction. Today's discussion is a bit complicated, I know, but so you can ask questions. That will help me to explain. If we are entering a new chapter, so we have not started discussion of Kaivalya proper, that you can have discussion. If you don't have questions, I shall continue. Yeah. You have somebody?
What is the significance of the fifth verse? The fifth verse about one mind.
Oh, yeah.
And why is that important?
ఫిఫ్త్ వన్ ఈస్ ప్రవృత్తి భేదే ప్రయోజకం చిత్తమేకం అనేకేషాం. ఓ యా, ద పాయింట్ ఈస్ యు లైఫ్ యాక్టివిటీస్ అండ్ ఎంపిరికల్ ప్లేయింగ్ ఆర్ రిలేటెడ్ టు ఫైవ్ క్లేశాస్, అవిద్యాస్ మీద రాగద్వేష అభినివేశ. సో నార్మలీ చిత్తం ఆర్ మెంటల్ వరల్డ్ ఈస్ డివైడెడ్ ఇన్ టు టూ ఫండమెంటల్ కేటగరీస్ అండ్ దేర్ యాక్షన్స్ ఆర్ గైడెడ్ బై దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ విచ్ కమ్స్ ఇన్ ది సాధన పాద ఫస్ట్. సో భోగ ఆర్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ అండ్ ద్వేగ ఆర్ వేగ విచ్ మీన్స్ అవర్ రియాక్షన్ టు ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్. ఐ షుడ్ ట్రై టు ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ ఇంగ్లీష్ బట్ జస్ట్ యూస్ ద సాంస్క్రిట్ వర్డ్ విచ్ ఈస్ ఆఫన్ యూస్డ్ ఇన్ ది ఎర్లియర్ రికార్డింగ్స్ యు నో. So our whole life is in a way, whole mental world can be divided into two fundamental categories. One is experience, second our response to a reaction to those experiences. Experience not necessarily means an experience that comes from outside world, an experience from within our own mind, let us say. When I am hungry, how I react to my hunger. When I become angry, how I react to my anger. So, these are two fundamental categories when you start thinking of mind. Now, normally, when you acquire these skills, when you are gifted by these skills, especially mantra and aushadha skills, skills that you develop, you know, mantra siddhi and aushadha siddhi. When you acquire new skills, actually your mind also will be colored or influenced by those skills. As I mentioned, you know, a person who has started studying music, when he becomes an accomplished musician, his mind will be different. The same person when he becomes an athlete, as an athlete, he has a way of interpreting his own athleticism and he has a way of interpreting his own skill in music. So, our way of reacting to our own skills, our own internal experiences, will create certain impact on the mental world. So, all these chittas, as well, chitta used in the plural sense, in anekesham chitta. So many chittas. So if you get these skills, you develop different mental vibrations. All these constitute changing momentary manifestations of one chitta. The real chitta is one. That's the idea. That is the implication of this world. So you understand the significance of interpretation of chitta here in the coming sutras. When we deal with Kaivalya. See, every activity will produce some impact on the mental world. You cannot do anything, you cannot acquire any of the skills without those skills having some effect or influence on your mind. When we do anything with full awareness of what we are doing, it's called Kartrutva and Bhoktrutva. Means when you do certain things with the full awareness that you are doing it, and consciously when you do that, the action is over, but that produces an impact or residual effect on the mental world. It is called apurva because it don't exist before you started that action. It is adrishta. It cannot be seen, but it can be felt. So, that is the psychology behind the very concept of karma yoga. When we practice karma yoga, when we do good actions produce a wealth of good vrittis, good vasanas, good samskaras. They counteract the influence of bad vrittis, bad samskaras. And what is the surplus will help you to even go beyond that. That is the Vedantic interpretation. So, That means the effect of our physical actions on our mind. The effect of our gross physical actions in our mind, that frequently we don't fully understand. It's not so. It's a fact. You go on doing good actions. Without you being aware that they are good actions, you cannot eventually remain a bad person. You have to be a good person. That's the idea. Because good actions will produce good chitta. So, the plural, chittam used as a plural is peculiar to this particular context in Vedanta. Yoga chitta urthi nirodha, their chitta is singular. It is. But here, different manifestations of the same mind or mental world as you evolve, as you acquire new skills. So, as I mentioned, when language was not so well developed, philosophy was overdeveloped. Then this kind of problems arise. Same word implying different things in different contexts. Any other doubt you can ask?
There is a process that's somewhat predictable if we follow this practice and referring to, but it seems to me that it's true too
Better use the system. I can't hear it.
That bad consequences happen to good people. I mean, apparently bad consequences happen to bad people and vice versa, right?
True, yeah, right.
That good consequences, good consequences, maybe not exclusively or entirely, also happen to so-called bad people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you address that?
Yeah, that conflict is always there. This paradox, this conflict is resolved by yoga, Vedanta philosophers, by analyzing different life cycles, previous life cycles. That creates a dilemma for people who believe there's only one life. But that's how yoga and Vedanta philosophers analyze this paradox. I mean, good people having to suffer a lot of problems and bad people having a good life. You find in the Mahabharata, in the Duryodhana had a wonderful life. You look at him, he was living in a palace most of his lifetime. And his brothers, cousins, were good people, mostly living in forest, eating roots and leaves and grass, How do you explain this paradox? So this is explained by analyzing the whole spectrum of their existence. We cannot philosophically resolve this problem unless you take into consideration the possibility of preceding life cycles and following life cycles. That's the idea.
If I was searching correctly, this is something about that it's possible to grasp what is a transcendent reality. What does that mean? I mean, how does one grasp
Yeah, you know, the transcendental reality, the ultimate metaphysical conclusion of yoga and Sankhya are not acceptable to Vedantins. So great thinkers like Vivekananda, who was a great saint, Shankaracharya himself, who wrote the commentary on Vyasa's commentary on Yoga Sutras, Vyasa Bhashya Vivarana. And also modern thinkers like Dr. Radhakrishnan in the comparative philosophy. Now they agree that the Sankhya or Yoga conclusion, the metaphysical conclusion, is logically not satisfactory. But these systems are important because they give a wonderful analysis of the human mind, human emotions, human feelings, which are really wonderful. So, I should come to yoga, Sankhya system, which is linked to the yoga philosophy. Sankhya system tells you there are two fundamental categories. Purusha is self-effulgence, it is consciousness. Swami Vivekananda, when he interprets Yoga Sutras, he uses the word Purusha almost in the sense of Atman, which is not fully, which may not be fully accepted by mainstream yoga or Sankhya philosophers. That's an important point, remember. But that is the only way you can explain yoga philosophy. So, the word Purusha used here is the consciousness, the awareness, the supreme reality, which are true nature. So that will take you beyond dualism, beyond yoga, Sankhya dualism. So, the ultimate reality is that we are the supreme reality, transcendental reality, the all-pervading reality, the divine reality present in all of us. That is the ultimate, that's the only answer we can give as the question, what is the transcendental reality? Now the question arises, why can't we accept it? Reading a book is fine. It doesn't happen that way. See, there are many wonderful ideas that we want to believe and practice. We are convinced that this is the most wonderful thing. But our mind frequently doesn't allow us to actually practice what our intellect tells us, do this. We can't do that. That's the main problem. That's where the yoga and Sankhya analysis of the human mind becomes very important. See, how do... See, let me ask this question. Modern criminology tells you that 90% of normal criminals would like to live good human beings, given a chance. And even if you give them a joke, they can't do that. You may call it habit formation. Psychology, modern psychology tells you. You want to do most wonderful things in the world. You want to be a Buddha if possible. We all want that. We all want to live a wonderful life. We all want to have wonderful mind, wonderful body, wonderful thinking, speak wonderful words. Even suppose you take a decision, tomorrow I am going to meet that person. I am going to talk to him nicely. I shall be very friendly with a person whom you have, with whom you quarrel today. You take a decision, tomorrow I am going to be friendly with you. Till the last second, split second, you are fully convinced you'll be a different person. When you meet the person, you can't do that. So how do you explain this mystery? This conflict, this absolute contradiction, paradox, means your mind doesn't permit you what you want to do. On a physical plane, you can take a decision what road to take, what car to drive, what shop you can go to do marketing. You can decide. But what thought to think, even what words to speak, we can't fully decide. Words we can decide if you're a trained diplomat or maybe a salesman. But beyond that, when you are not compelled by your due profession, you can't really speak what you want to speak. That's because we can't really think what we want to think. There is no freedom. There is a mental block. We are imprisoned. So why this happens? Yoga tells you. That's the greatness of yoga. This is contribution of Vyasa, to be more precise. Vyasa Bhashya brings out. You know, Patanjali is very, very patchy. Doesn't go into any details. So Vyasa tells you this concept of karma, vritti, samskara, sankalpa, karma chakra. Whole cycle. You cannot speak good words to him, though he fully decided, because you have created in your mind something by speaking bad words today. So that effect comes to the surface, though you have a strong will, you decide, you determine to speak good words. We have no control over not only our mind, but even our words frequently. So why? Something that is not within our power, which we already created, which is our burden, which we created, drags us in one direction. What is that? Samskara. Patanjali calls it samskara. Patanjali doesn't use the word. He uses the word only one. Parinama tapa samskara dukhehi guru visheshacha dukkameva sarvam vivekinaha. That's one sutra that he uses, emphasizing this. But the word samskara as a concept is a contribution of Vyasa. Because of samskaras. Now how to change the samskara? We can change a machine, we can change the program of a computer, we can anything, but we can't change our own tendencies, impressions, characteristics. It's called samskaras together. So how to do that? So the yoga psychology will tell you, you try where you have freedom to act. We have freedom to act at the physical level. So doing some good actions where we have the freedom. So at the physical level, we have freedom to do good things. So if a person goes on doing good things for a long time, he will have develop a tendency to speak good words, to think good thoughts, and that will eventually have an effect on his mind. So that is called reverse involution. You are starting a journey backward from the level of five gross elements all the way up to Mahatattva. This is so we can do that. We can bring about a change in our mental world by doing good actions where we have some freedom. So a person who goes on doing good actions, he slowly starts speaking good words, thinking good thoughts. Remember, when I'm talking the words, I don't mean the words of a diplomat. Somebody can tell you, have a great day, you can say, that's not the, but I mean real expression, real mental feelings, that's what I mean talking about. So that's what I'm talking. So that change can happen, that's a contribution of Vyasa who wrote the commentary on the Yoga Sutras. We will continue the discussion vigorous discussion, debates in next session. Thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu. I have one announcement for all of you. So, you know, we have Durga Puja celebration on 13th October, Saturday. Puja will begin at 10 o'clock and there will be devotional singing, then lunch prasad at 12:15. And after that, from 2:30 to 5 o'clock, we have the open house, old temple, or, you know, first Hindu temple in the US, old temple open house. So, after Puja, if you go to the temple at 2:30, there will be guided tours, exhibitions, videos. So please remember, Durga Puja, Saturday, October 13th. The Puja will start at 10 a.m. Okay, thank you.